Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, Unmissable Opinions, brought to you by the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. Thanks again for tuning into the show. This is episode 81. You can tap in your app and check the show notes to subscribe to the show. You can also find us on social media, on Twitter, at the Barcelona Pod, at HiltonD13, or more importantly, we've got a closed Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast, so type it in there and join the community that is ever-growing every day. You can join myself, Dan Hilton, and Frances Tomas, as we've got a jam-packed show. Don't want to waste your time anymore. Frances, what are we talking about today?
In today's show, we're going to be joined by Rick Sharma, fantastic journalist from Sport ES, and obviously sportenglish.com, and he's going to be telling us all about the latest about this fantastic week in which Barca obviously won La Copa and are incredibly close, only 3 points away from winning La Liga. Also, it's the second edition of our Peña Roundtable. We've got representatives from Dallas, San Francisco, and Austin joining us today, and it's going to be fantastic. The conversation is really opinionated, and our Peña representatives start disagreeing with each other, which is fantastic. So, yeah, it's all for you to enjoy. The Barcelona Podcast 81 starts right here.
Let's get this show started. We're really delighted to be welcomed by another one of our famed guests, particularly on Twitter. We're delighted to be welcomed by none other than Rick Sharma, a journalist for Sport, Mirror Football, and many more, but I'll let him do that talking. Rick, welcome to the Barcelona Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we'd like to start with talking a little bit about your background, and not just necessarily with Barcelona, but as a journalist too. Did you always see yourself covering FC Barcelona or being in the Barcelona-Madrid region, and where did this passion begin?
No, definitely not. I started off in England, in London. I actually started in my back garden in Southampton, I think, when I was about 8 years old. I used to play football with my brother in the back garden, and then at the end I would go inside the house and write a match report over what happened. So it's something I always wanted to do. But I got into it in London, and then in 2014 I moved to Barcelona. And it was only really when Gareth Bale moved to Madrid that I started to think, oh, maybe I could work abroad rather than just cover the Premier League.
And that makes a lot of sense. If Gareth Bale can do it, then so can we.
Yeah, exactly. It was just like, oh, there's people over there working in Spain, and Gareth Bale's over there. There's plenty of interest. And interest in Barcelona Madrid is already quite big, but it's just grown so much over the last few years as well.
Yeah, I think Frances and I have both learned. Now, Frances is in London and from Catalonia, and we've learned so much even ourselves about the people who are watching Barcelona, and especially Barcelona news in English. We're just really, we were always surprised whenever those stats and the geography of who was listening to the podcast came out, because just, especially in the United States, as we started to learn that people in the United States are really taking to this, as well as London, and, you know, we're seeing pockets in, we have a big fan base in Nigeria and India and English speakers, and so, you know, the way that we present Barcelona in English has been really important. And I mean, have you seen over the course of your career already how much it's grown and just the way that social media have changed that?
Yeah, absolutely. We have quite similar demographics for the English version of Diario Sport. America is number one, England is number two, India is number three, I think, on the list of people that are reading the site. And those numbers are growing as well year on year. In England, when I started working as a journalist, I think there was a little bit of interest in Barcelona Madrid because of the Ronaldo-Messi kind of dynamic. But nobody really cared too much beyond that, apart from in the Champions League when they played English clubs, or if they got to the final and that was, you know, it was Barcelona Madrid in the final. But now, the news is covered in England as much as it is in Spain almost. Minuscule stories that we have in sport or other newspapers have as well just get picked up by English media straight away. Before, maybe it took 2 or 3 days for any stories sort of found their way into the English media, but now it's all exactly at the same time as it's happening, more or less.
And how do you find the English media and the Spanish media to be different? Because, I mean, the way that Frances and I look at the Spanish media, we find that to be very sensationalized. But then again, you do have different publications in England that are just sensational Hollywood-type things.
Yeah, I mean, it is very different, I think. Especially, I mean, like, working inside the media. There's no English newspaper which has sort of, national newspaper, which has sort of favourite teams. Obviously, there's a little bit of bias among individual journalists who have agendas to push or have teams that they support and write about. But compared to Spain, where of course the main newspapers are divided up into Barcelona or Real Madrid supporting newspapers, it's incredibly different. And there's stories that are published in the Spanish media that English media would never dream of publishing because it's just so partisan.
Yeah, certainly. But to ask you first, we're going to transition now into basically just talking about FC Barcelona. Of course, that's why we're having you on the show, on the Barcelona podcast. And it seems like across all publications, whether it was in England or in Spain, and regardless of who they were connected to, the big news of the week and this coming week is about Andres Iniesta. None other than Andres Iniesta helped the team win the Copa del Rey. And I think it's a foregone conclusion, and just for full transparency, when we're recording this, he's not yet officially announced. But again, when you look at the tiers, you look at the Sevilla match, we know that it's a foregone conclusion how this story is going to end. So my question for you then is, what are some of your best memories of Iniesta? And how do you think his legacy, this one's a little more difficult, how do you think his legacy will be different from that of Xavi and Carles Puyol?
I can tell you straight off the bat what my worst memory of Andres Iniesta is. As a Chelsea fan, it's 2009 or whatever, when he scored the Iniesta-thon. That was very painful. And it's quite remarkable, actually, that I've come around to like Iniesta a lot, really, as a someone to deal with and also as someone that you see to play after he did that to my team. best memories, I mean, one that comes to mind straight away is the final. That was one of the best games Iniesta has played in the last few years. Against Sevilla just this Saturday. Sensational performance, and like from the start you could tell he was completely on it and up for it. He dominated the game in the opening stages. He was the one that was getting Barca to push Sevilla back and almost pin them back in their area from the start. And then he hit the bar, which is like, I mean, it was deflected, but you think, okay, I mean, Iniesta is a player that occasionally takes a shot and you never really expect him to go in. So you're like, oh, that's actually a decent effort. And then he scored in the second half, of course. And it just felt like the whole final was built around Iniesta. I mean, even Messi took a back seat in that final compared to Iniesta. Other memories, I think he was very good against Madrid at the Bernabeu in, I think, 2015 when Barca won there. And just generally, it's not always the games where he has like a key decisive role that you kind of remember. It's just his class and his quality when he's on the ball and the way when he gets the ball. Similar to Messi, actually, but when he gets the ball, people just expect something to happen. And it's just someone, any touch Iniesta takes is worth watching.
Well, you kind of, in that answering of that question, you gave away a little bit of your own personal bias with Chelsea. And so that's a perfect transition to the next question that comes, not about Chelsea's first team, but Barcelona, and this is the news of the day, Barcelona have beaten Chelsea 3-1 in the UEFA Youth League. And the last group of champions for Barcelona, at least, which included Sandro Ramirez, Munir Eldadi and Adama, who now plays for Middlesbrough in the championship, the second division in England. And they never really, any of the three, made their mark on the first team, though Sandro and Munir did have supporting roles back in the 2015 season. But with the hotbed issue right now currently going on of the integration of academy prospects up to Barça B, up to the first team, how do you, and I guess you're both an insider because you're in Barcelona and you're in that scene, but then your heart obviously being, let's say, not exactly with Barcelona, how do you see those players and making that transition? And what is it that fundamentally you think, or maybe not fundamentally, needs to change with the way Barcelona are doing things to make sure they get these kids, who clearly were a class above the rest of the other U19s, to get them to the first team?
It's difficult because in Barcelona, people are kind of spoiled by the generation that came from the youth team and just was just so incredible, which Iniesta, of course, was part of. I don't think there's a magic formula. And I think Barca, a lot of people say Barcelona haven't been treating La Masia with as much respect as it should be treated with, and that they've been, you know, signing a lot of players from outside just to try and keep the team in the division. Sometimes you just think that generation that made it just had a special talent, and there is no just magic formula to get these players into the first team. I mean, Mounir Al-Hanadi had a lot of chances, and like he's doing all right this season. I think he's got across all competitions 13 goals, which isn't bad for a top flight team. And I mean, if you can churn out players who are that quality, that's a good going for your youth system. It's just the Barcelona fans have been so spoiled by how good the Iniesta, Puyol, Xavi generation, Messi were, that I mean, maybe no youth team will ever create that kind of level of player across the board again. In the current team, Abel Ruiz, who scored today, he's looked good. He's played in the Copa del Rey a bit for Barca this season, scored a few goals in that, and he actually does look a cut above the other players in Barca B's side. When he gets the ball, he looks good, he looks sharp, he looks strong as well, which is important. Another player who played today in that the Barca win in Chelsea was Ricky Puig, who's, he looks, he's so small, he looks like he's about 15 years old, if that. But he's very, very good on the ball. He reminds me a bit of David Silva in terms of how he takes the ball and uses it. Perhaps physically he's got to develop a bit more. I mean, we know as Messi is a good example, you don't have to be 6 foot tall to be a good footballer, but he looks so, so small that, you know, maybe he has to develop a bit more physically. And even then, he may have great technique and great skill, but it's also the mentality and the determination of making it that you need to get to the top.
And we even heard news this week about Alenia, and about how, again, there's so much different stuff that comes out that we know that he's been the talisman of the B team in their attempt at least to try to stay in the second division, which, again, at this point in the relegation zone, isn't going so well. But then with all this negativity, there's reports coming out that some of his teammates are a little frustrated at the role that he's played. And when you have a guy like Carlos Alenia, and you can go down through the years now where Xavi Simons is always the name we pop up being the youngest of these next heralded stars, that when you have guys like Alenia who are really pegged as can't-miss guys from the ages of 14, 15, how do you think players like Alenia are supposed to navigate this way that now he's 20 and you expect him to be in the first team, but maybe are these the kind of guys that are going to believe that they're there, or does Barcelona have to make sure that they only have guys like a Sergi Roberto who are willing to be unselfish with their own career and slave away on the bench before they get their spot?
I think just because of the demands on Barca's first team, you can see that, like, from the, you know, they've won the double practically, they're 1 point away from winning the league, which would be the double, and yet there's still discussion in Valverde's future. That doesn't leave a lot of room for the coach to put a player like Alenia just into the team. Alenia himself, I've been a little bit disappointed by him when I've been to a few Barca B games this season, mainly to try and watch Marcus McGuain, who's obviously an English player, and so some of my employers are interested in me seeing how he's doing, and at some point writing about him. But he hasn't actually featured that much, he's been on the bench a lot, and Alenia has played in most of the games. And he's got a lot of class and quality. And you said, you brought up Sergio Roberto, and that's who he kind of reminds me of. Maybe not in style, but in terms of how Sergio Roberto was like Alenia. He went for years and years and years, and people thought he was going to make it. And then he sort of drifted a bit, and then people thought, well, maybe he won't make it. And then eventually he did, when Luis Enrique turned him into a right back. Obviously, that won't happen to Alenia. He's not that sort of player, but maybe he has to either leave the club and look for football elsewhere to play in the top flight. I think he is good enough to play in La Liga as it stands at the moment, just not at Barcelona. Or he has to take the gamble, like Sergio Roberto did, and just sit and wait for his chance. And some players that would suit them, like it obviously did for Sergio Roberto, who maybe Sergio Roberto, if he'd left, would never have got the confidence or never have got that sort of momentum up to become as good as he has done. Or not, maybe Alenia, if Alenia goes to another club, maybe he'll play a whole season and be absolutely flying, and then Barca can maybe bring him back. He's got quality, it's just completely unknown whether that's going to translate into consistently good performances for a team that is as demanding as Barca.
It's really interesting your response to that, because I think from afar, where because you said you've seen Alenia play, and it's not that you don't have faith in him in the future, but you're much more realistic on where he is in his progression now. And he can't just walk into the Barcelona first team next year and expect to get a great amount of playing time. And, you know, you say that there are some missing years in between there, where I think you'd probably agree with this, that Barcelona fans, not that they're spoiled, not that Culés are spoiled with what they have, but in a sense they are, that they expect that Sergio Busquets, when he started playing for Pep Guardiola, was almost pretty much first team ready and just slotted right in there like a glove. And the way it works in modern football, players just can't do that. There's things they have to learn in first team football before they get through that. So I guess then the follow up to that question would be, when you have these players that are so highly touted, how do you, even as a journalist, try to make sure that people who aren't getting to see Alenia week in and week out, how do you temper their expectations?
So it's a good question, especially as increasingly, instead of trying to temper the expectations, what a lot of places want you to do is throw fuel on the expectations and get people to, you know, oh, this, you know, this guy's going to be the next Iniesta, the next Xavi or whatever, and get them to click on the article and have a look. Whereas as a journalist, you do want to kind of, you want to write something that you can look back at and think, that's the truth, that's genuinely my opinion, and maybe you'll be right, maybe you'll be wrong, but you want to put something out there that you believe is true. I think that Alenia, it's understandable that Barca fans are excited about him because he is a skillful player. He's of the sort of similar mould to Xavi and Iniesta in that kind of way. But it's almost because of a lack of other sort of really top quality players around them that people are so excited about him in particular, which is, I mean, that's a problem for him as well, I think.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And now I think we'll go from, I really enjoyed the things that you had to say about the youth team and the academy, and we'll, I guess, finish up talking again about the first team, kind of bring it full circle, because, again, with the Barcelona podcast, somehow we met 14, 15 minutes of an interview and have yet to talk about Lionel Messi. So the focus against Sevilla may have been Iniesta's game, and yes, Messi did play well, and it seemed like the whole team was clicking in a dominating effort. So how do you think, it's now been a few weeks after the, we'll call it the Roma debacle, how do you think the views in Spain and the feelings that you're getting around you from just the general populace about just capturing the double? Do you think we're at a point where people are kind of trying to put Roma behind them and are finally happy with winning a basically at this point still in an unbeaten way in La Liga and then capturing the Copa del Rey?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, actually, before the Copa del Rey final, I think I wrote an article to Sport saying that even if Barca win the Copa, there'll still be a lot of discontent around the Roma game. Maybe it's not until we see what happens in the Champions League final. If Real Madrid win the Champions League, then maybe that feeling will still be there. There'll be a feeling of a disappointment in really what is a sensational achievement. Barcelona didn't win the league last season. They've got it back. They've got it back off Real Madrid, and they've played very well throughout the whole season. The double is something that should be celebrated. And the way they won against Sevilla, I think that was really important. If they'd won maybe by one goal in a tight game, I think then we'd still be hearing a lot about Roma. But because of just the emphatic way they won, that it was almost kind of saying, like, this is who we are. That Roma game was an aberration, and an inexplicable aberration, really. But this is who we are. This is the team we can be. And I think that Sevilla performance was probably the best of the season in any competition for Barcelona that I can remember anyway. Certainly going forward, they were just sensational. And I think people are now content. Maybe that will change if Real Madrid win the Champions League because of the complex nature of that rivalry. But winning the double is a great achievement, and Valverde has definitely earned another shot next season at doing it all over again.
Yeah, I have to agree with you about the basically minute to one to minute 90 dominance. And I actually had saved on the way I watch it here, I had saved the Celta de Vigo match where they dominated for the first 20 minutes or so. It was the most dominant 20 minutes I saw, but I think I would agree with you that this was 90 minutes full action for Barcelona, the best that we've seen of them. And speaking of seeing work in the future, I guess that's a silly transition, but it was, Rick, a pleasure to have you on the show. And so, of course, the question we ask all our guests at the end is, where can we follow your work moving forward?
On Twitter, which is Rick without a C, so R-I-K Sharma, S-H-A-R-M-A underscore, because somebody else has already taken Rick Sharma without the underscore. And I normally post work I do on there. I work for Reuters and DPA, which are a couple of news agencies, as well as the Mirror, like you mentioned, and the English version of Diario Sport, and occasionally in the Spanish version when I write articles in Spanish, which they have to heavily correct, because that's difficult to tell. And then just wherever else people want to hire me to write. So maybe during the World Cup, I'll be writing for a few different places.
We look forward to hearing your work. And of course, for our listeners, just check in your show notes where you can see what Rick is working on now, and you can follow him along. And again, a pleasure, Rick, for having you on the show. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Dan. I am hugely excited to be joined by our Peña representatives once again. This is the second edition of the Peña Roundtable here on the Barcelona podcast, and I could not be any more happy to welcome Trisha Varma from Dallas, Joe Dixon from Peña San Francisco, and Will Haas from the newly formed Peña Austin. Guys, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well.
A little tired from celebrating, but good.
Right, so yeah. How was yesterday? Obviously, yesterday we won La Copa. We were incredibly commanding against Sevilla. And I hear that you had a fantastic evening, and that went into the early morning for some of you. So, yes, please tell us about your experience. It's all about sharing.
I'll go ahead from Austin. So we were brand new. That was our fifth game meeting as a Peña. We had 11 people, which is three times the amount of people we had before. So it was very small but exciting for us. But yeah, I made some new friends, and I mean, what a game. Incredible to see. It looked like the whole game they were trying to get Iniesta to score, and finally it happened. And so yeah, we had a lot of fun watching that, and then we had a chance to spend time together afterwards visiting, may have had a drink or two, and yeah, it was a very fun day. So very happy in Austin today.
I think in Dallas too. I think our turnout was around 200 people. After 100, we stopped counting. Usually, we weren't expecting such a huge crowd. Usually, that's our crowd when we get Clásicos. But over the years, our Clásico has been growing significantly. But I think it was wonderful that Iniesta scored. I think that's what I was looking forward to, a good send off for our captain. But it was a good day. Good weather too.
Yeah, Joe from San Francisco. We had an amazing turnout as well. We had, I would say, close to 100, probably a little bit more. Absolutely fantastic day. The game could not have been any better. It was a little bittersweet seeing us play that well, seeing what resting our players could do. So yeah. that was a little bittersweet, but it was absolutely fantastic. Great to see Iniesta get his goal. It was interesting to think that he hasn't made his announcement yet, but you know, you could tell by the players' demeanors. You could tell by just the little things that happened during that game that this was most likely his last cup final with Barcelona. So, but the atmosphere was amazing. We had a great time. We all went out afterwards. Could not have been better. It was a great day in San Francisco.
It really was. It was a fantastic game of football. And I think that I'm picking up between the words that you just said that you're a little bit, how can I put it? Disappointed that rotation didn't happen before the Champions League game, because obviously for the Copa final there was rest, there was rotation. We still didn't lose in La Liga, which is great, but then the players were really rested, came out and had a great, great performance. Do you think that because they didn't get rest, that's why we got thrashed by Roma and got knocked out in the Champions League?
Yeah, I think it didn't really have to do with the resting. I think our lineup, Ernesto Valverde, definitely got his tactics wrong when it came to terms of putting in the substitution when, you know, we are losing 2-0. I think it was time that he put in a player that could possess the ball like Dembele. I thought if Dembele running at Roma would have been a different game, because Messi and Suarez couldn't do it. And I think Suarez definitely had a very poor game up front. And everyone had a poor game. But I think in terms of getting that tactic right and maybe putting in the rested players, we would have done at least be able to be in the final, even if we lose 2-0, 3-0.
Well, here's where I would slightly disagree. I think the blame falls squarely. This is Joe from the Peña Barcelona, so San Francisco. I think the blame falls squarely on Ernesto Valverde. I felt he has been, I think he's more concerned with having an undefeated Liga than winning the Champions League. there were multiple games in the run-up to this, to the Roma game, the second Roma game, where we should have rested players. Luis Suarez should not have been starting in certain games. Sergio Roberto, you watched him in the Roma second game. The man had played 90 minutes for each game, basically every game. Nelson Semedo could have been helpful there, but Sergio Roberto was absolutely just tired, just very tired. When we're in a situation where it's halftime, we're losing, Roma's playing better, and we know that they're pressing. The fact that we didn't put on a pacey winger to actually give their defense something to worry about, Roma was pressing with the full team. Not having a pacey winger to stretch the field to make them worry about what's going to happen if that ball gets played over the top, Dembele was the perfect option on the bench. But overall, Ernesto Valverde didn't rest players, didn't give them enough time to recover. And we were having a poor run of form since the international break, and he didn't notice that and adjust accordingly. So, yeah, squarely on Valverde.
I definitely agree with both of y'all that, you know, I feel like – this is Will from Austin, sorry. I feel like Valverde was kind of handed – not handed, but, you know, the squad that we had to start – I mean, this was one of our worst summers for signings ever. And, you know, players like Denny Suarez haven't had enough time. And so, you know, to do rotations and to have players fresh, I kind of feel like we don't have it right now. You know, you look at what Madrid has done and, you know, they've really built up that midfield to where, I mean, the results haven't happened in La Liga, but, you know, Champions League, they're there and we're not. And, you know, they have the ability to rest players. And while the undefeated Liga would be an incredible thing to do, and still is an incredible. We should feel so excited and happy and hopeful that that can happen. I would rather take a couple losses in the Liga and still be in Champions League right now because of rotations. So, I agree. Valverde got the lineup wrong that day, but he overall I feel like has done remarkably well with the kind of limited squad he's had to work with.
I think he did, but I also want to say I think there has been this narrative that we don't have the enough players on the bench to properly field a squad. And I think we're a little wrong there in that, yes, in the first part of the season, without Dembele, what Valverde did was amazing. He had to play more defensive. He didn't have that pacey winger. He didn't have those tools. You get Coutinho, and then Dembele comes back, and now you have these tools. Denis Suarez, first of all, Gomes, the dependence that we've put on him to the detriment of playing Dembele, playing Dennis. This is why when you come toward the end of the season, we don't have players that we trust in because Valverde never played those players. Dennis, given the time that Gomes has shown over the previous periods that he could produce, he's produced more than Gomes has with half the minutes. So we come to That's this true. Point of the season and we don't know if Dennis is as great as he could be because he hasn't given the time.
Well, definitely Dennis is going to stay. What the fault in that case, I think not a lot of people know, is in Denis Suarez's contract, he has a contract where it says every 10 games he plays, 800,000 goes to Man City. Same thing for Nelson Semedo. Every 50 official games he plays, 5 million goes to Benfica up to the first time he renews. So there's a lot of things that Valverde is limited by. And I think that was one of the reasons why Enrique and coaches like Pep Guardiola, they didn't want to be dictated because they needed the freedom to be able to use the players they wanted to use, where Valverde, I think, is a little bit on the quieter side and he listens to the board and kind of has to work with what he has because, of course, it costs us every 10 games that Dennis plays or every 50 games that Nelson plays.
Right, loads of thoughts in there. You pretty much answered the vast majority of the questions we had ready. You haven't answered this one, though. Charlie Barza says, obviously, there was Mundo Deportivo reports on the day of the final, Copa del Rey final, this is, that Valverde's job was at risk. Obviously, that was not the best way to prepare the final, and it is quite suspicious how the Catalan media can report on something that important when actually it could have made the squad far less stable in terms of focus that day. Do you think that winning the Copa final has actually saved his job? Or do you think it wasn't dependent on that and it was just the Catalan media trying to play mind games?
Yeah, I mean, I'll step in. Joe here again. I think his job was safe before that. I think as much as I am very disappointed in how he did the Champions League, and I have a lot of issues with how he's played the team, rotation, everything, I think we have to all step back as Barca fans and say, yes, we are still undefeated in the league. We're going to win the double. The problem with the Copa del Rey final was we saw that this team could have won a Champions League final and all of that. So it's disappointing. But realistically, do you want to even deal with going through another coach search, finding a person, going through without really seeing if Ernesto Valverde could? I mean, bottom line of what I'm saying is I think the board is smart enough to be aware that regardless of his shortcomings, he has done very well this season, and you would at least give him another season instead of trying to find a new coach. It would be too much. The coaching market right now is so absurd, it'd be hard to find another person.
Okay, I think we mostly agree with that. So let's move on to the next question then. We've got a question from Atharva saying, Iniesta cannot be replaced, but we do need someone to fill in his role. So who would you pick and why? Then I've got a question by Tom that says, if the club decides to sign a top midfielder to make up for the loss of Iniesta, who do you think it should be? So what do you guys think?
This is Trishaw from Dallas. I think in terms of signing, I know I've heard from many places that Arthur is going to be coming in early in summer, and instead of having him come 2019 in January. So I think in terms of signing a top midfielder, I don't think we will sign one. I think the bigger option for me in terms of changing the squad would be to get another striker into the team. Someone, you know, like Paco does what he can, but there's no one really like Suarez. Suarez pretty much plays every single game. And we need a player that can replace him instead of the midfield. I know a lot of people are going to be leaving the team from what I've heard, but I don't think we need to get a top midfielder in the team yet.
Yeah, this is Will from Austin. I totally agree with that. You know, again, you made a great point about Denis Suarez's contract and the payments to City, but, you know, at some point you have to view him as a signing, and maybe those payments, instead of, you know, signing someone for a huge fee, are effectively your signing. I feel like he would be a good replacement. I feel like we already have a great potential replacement in Coutinho too. So maybe a signing to replace Iniesta isn't necessary, but more, as you mentioned, you know, somebody up front that can fill some of the games that Louis can't play all these games, you're right. And, you know, there's been lots of talk about Antoine Griezmann and everything, which I think he would be great. I mean, if we had to sign a top midfielder, I would love Christian Eriksen. But I agree. I don't know that that's necessary. Arthur's going to be a really solid signing, and, you know, maybe finding a way to integrate Alenya to get him some more minutes. You know, he's not going to play in Clasicos or Champions League, but, you know, against a Leganés or a Levante or I guess not Malaga now. Sorry, guys.
No, you're definitely not. And we're not very sad about that one either, are we?
No, we are not.
Not at all. Not at all.
For me, Joe, San Francisco, I think when it comes to signings next year, my biggest concern is we re-sign Umtiti. I think that's what you need to do first and foremost. That's going to be the signing that cements Barcelona for the next couple of years. That's a future signing. That's what we need to take care of. In regards to midfield, I have been a strong supporter of Denis Suarez. You see how he plays. You see his touch. You see his potential. I mean, there was a goal that he and Sergio Roberto connected for back in the season. It was a Copa del Rey game. Can't remember the exact game, but he passes the ball to Roberto. Roberto puts it over the top. He brings it down with the left, finishes it with the right. I mean, his finishing, his vision, his ability to run at players, I think you give that kid more time and he could be the next Iniesta in the long term.
I agree.
Totally agree.
Yeah. You have Arthur coming in. That's going to supplement, but we have...
Right, linking to what you're saying, and make a really good point in there. We've got a question from Terry, and Terry asks, can the board be trusted to recruit sensibly and give Valverde what he needs?
This is Trishaw from Dallas again. I do not like this board, and that's, I think, maybe personal, but when Sandro became president, and then his vice president became president in Bartomeu, I didn't like the way, like we all agreed, the way they go about managing players and managing team. I think they're very drawn to having the commercial aspect secured for Barcelona compared to having the footballing aspect. where I felt when we had Laporta, we had we had a nonprofit company in the front of our jersey. We didn't care about money. We valued our players. You know, that was the years that we won so much leading into, because he created the team. You have to look at it in terms of 3 years ago before a new president came in, because he built that team leading into our trouble and things like that. So I don't think I can trust this board, but it's what we have to deal with.
Yeah, this is Will from Austin. Definitely kind of feels like we've, you know, even just look at the B team, they're just buying players. And I think it's important that the B team stays in the second division for competition purposes. But, you know, the whole purpose of the B team or La Masia is not necessarily for results. It's for development. And again, I think development will happen the best in, you know, in a stronger league, obviously. But yeah, you know, they're buying players for that. We're just buying players for the first team. And I read something like a year ago or something like that, that, you know, Barca should really aim to buy a truly difference-making player, like one or two a year. And the rest of the players, the second string players, should all come from La Masia. Like, that's where they should come from. And I thought that was it was a really basic thing to say, but I wish we would go back to that. So,
Will, do you know that we purchased 11 different players for our 11 new players to the B team?
We purchased a lot for the B team.
Yeah,
we're losing our identity as a club coming from the foundation of the club, which is La Masia. I mean, the cool thing is when you look at if you follow La Masia on Instagram and everything, you see some of the young players like Xavi Simmons and all these other kids, and you're like, wow, Barca has this crazy future ahead. But the problem comes down to if our board / our coaches aren't willing to integrate those players in. I mean, I could tell you so many names of players that I used to love. I mean, I'll tell you straight up, when I found out we bought Neymar, I was upset because I loved Christian Theo. And I thought having him coming through with that Barca DNA, I thought Neymar was too flashy. I thought it was going to be a problem. But we're really getting to this point, and that's one of the reasons why I don't want to buy Griezmann.
Okay, plenty of very opinionated opinions, which is what the podcast is about. So thank you very much, everyone. I've got the last question, which probably is the most important, is which Peña are you from? How can we find you and how can we join you? So let's start with Will.
All right, so this is Will Haas from Austin. I was actually on the board of the New York Peña the last 4 years, but just moved back to Austin in November, and we are 5 games into starting our Peña here. We are meeting at the Tavern, which is at 12th and Lamar. You know, we're a growing Peña, so we're kind of small right now, but you know, it's been a good group, and we'd love to have anyone that's in the area, or if you're visiting, especially you guys in Dallas, come on down, enjoy a weekend in Austin, and we'll catch a game together.
Sounds amazing. Joe.
Yes. So we are the San Francisco Peña. You can find us on it's great because we have great SEO. We show up the first thing you type up when you type in San Francisco Peña, but we are Peña de Barcelonista de San Francisco on Facebook. We're on Meetup. We meet at, for smaller games, we meet at South Beach Cafe on the Embarcadero in San Francisco. Beautiful place, 800 Embarcadero, San Francisco. We're going to be at the Thirsty Bear for the Clásico, our biggest venue. Peña, Barcelonista, San Francisco on Facebook. Join the group. It's very active. We have very lively discussions. I've actually been told to tone it down a bit because I get a little opinionated, but we have a great group of people. We're on Meetup, same thing. We have a website where I do game recaps. But yeah, join us on the Facebook. You'll get all the information you need from there.
Opinionated sounds great. I would never tell you to tone it down, just for the record. Trishaw.
Hey guys, this is Trishaw from Barca Dallas. We're located in Dallas, of course. We meet all the big games and all our home games, away games. They're all at the Rugby House in Plano. It's 8604 Preston Road, number 100. So if you guys are ever, you know, the Austin guys or San Fran, if you want to come down to Dallas anytime, if you want to catch the Roma game here, let me know. I'll set everything up for you guys.
And we have our website, peñabarcadallas.com, where you can check out our members, our board members. You can become members, buy T-shirts. And our Facebook page is Barca Dallas. So if you search for Barca Dallas on Google, you'll get to our website, or even on Facebook, you'll just show up at our Facebook page. You know, join us. We're very opinionated as well. And you'll get all the good news there.
Well, sounds great. Again, this is the end of the second Peña Roundtable here on the Barca podcast, the Barcelona podcast. And again, it's just been fantastic. You obviously love the club. You've been following for many years. And it still amazes me how people around the world can be so passionate about something happening so many kilometers and miles away from them. Thank you for all you do. You're clearly spreading the Barca word around the world. And it's been a pleasure to have you here.
So there you have it. Plenty of thanks to both Rick and the Peñas in our Peña Roundtable as we wrap up another show, another edition of the Barcelona podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barca.
Forza.